Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo. My name is Gemma, and I have with me again this week, I have my excellent friend, Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Glad to be back. How's everyone doing? Or how are you doing, I guess? Yeah, how's everyone? Everyone listening, how's everyone?
Yeah, how is everybody? Hopefully we're all excellent. I'm going to use that word like we did last week. I'm just going to keep using that now. I like it.
Perfect.
Let's excellent. Be excellent to each other. Yeah.
Wait, that's excellent. One Simpsons reference I know. The excellent.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even get that. That's...
You're always quoting The Simpsons, and I never have any idea what you're talking about. That I know.
Dang it. And Trev's not even here to enjoy that. So yeah. When he listens, he can be happy with himself that he's made that influence on you. Well, we have another big show to talk about. Mario Day was obviously quite recently, and we did talk about it a bit last week, but we were preemptive, and now we know all the details about what happened on Mario Day. We've got a nice healthy list of games that we're playing, as well as our usual Switch 2 rumors of the week. So let's begin with that Mario Day roundup, because it was on a Sunday, which was an odd day, I think, for announcements. But I think a lot of them did actually come out technically on the 11th. Am I right about that on the Monday? I feel like it was all over the place.
I don't know. I don't know what day the announcements actually happened. I wasn't paying attention on Sunday. Although I will say quickly that because it was Mario Day, my youngest son, Max, mm-hmm. decided that we needed to play some Mario game. So he and I busted out Mario Kart. Sam didn't join us. He was down in the basement playing Elden Ring on his new laptop. So Max and I went through some ourselves. We had a lot of fun. Maybe it's better with just the two of us.
Yeah. Who wins out of the two of you?
He did better than me on the first one. Neither one of us got, I think he ended up with fourth and I ended up with seventh in the cup.
Okay.
But in the second one we did, I had first and he had second. So we were very proud of ourselves.
Well, that's good. Yes. I'm proud of you too. You just make me jealous because I still haven't found my copy of Mario Kart. That's okay. No, that's nice. That's nice. I didn't think I did play any Mario games on Mario Day. As I said last week, it was my son's birthday, so we were pretty busy. We didn't make time. You know what we did do, though? Not Mario-related, but birthday-related, kind of. Like, I said to Harrison, my son, what do you want to do? Do you want to play a game together? And he chose Lego City Undercover.
Excellent.
Our favorite. Yes. Yes. I hadn't played it for, like, I don't know, 6 months. So we jumped back into that, and we play this cops and robbers game where we chase each other around. And have to catch each other and smash the vehicles. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's such a great game. And I'm in your Mario Kart situation with that, because Sophie took what do you call it? I keep saying cartridge because I'm so old and in the 70s on the Intellivision. That's what we call them. But anyway, that's missing. Sophie took it to college with her and came back without it. So.
I thought cartridge, but actually I guess it's a card. I suppose it's a game card.
Yeah, I think it's card. Yeah, yeah. Game card. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll combine it. It's a card ridge.
Yes, we've just coined a new term there. Yes. Oh, that's a shame that you've lost it. But yes, you should have picked up in one of those sales that was like, wasn't it 90% off or something?
Yeah, it was super cheap and I didn't do it because I just didn't want to. I guess I decided I didn't want to fill up my my memory card with it. Mm-hmm. But that was a dumb mistake on my part.
Yeah, next time there'll be another sale. Yeah,
it'll be on sale again.
Yes, but anyway, back to Mario Day. Yes. There were kind of three big key messages, I suppose, in the whole scheme of things. The first one was that we have confirmation of a Mario movie sequel. We kind of all expected this, I think, but it's actually happening. And Miyamoto spoke about it, as well as I don't know the dude's name. Chris was his first name from Illumination. So they both spoke about the upcoming movie. It's due for a release in April 2026, which is, what, about 2 years away? Seems like a long time, actually. My son was like, we've got to wait 2 years. I'm like, yeah, well, I guess we didn't have to wait that long originally, did we, when we first were told about it? I think it was more like 12 months, was it?
Yeah, I don't know. Like it may not have even been a full year. I can't recall exactly, but certainly not two.
Yeah, but I mean, they take more than a year to make these animations, but we just weren't told about the first one until closer to the release. Now we have a nice 2 year wait, but hey, it's exciting still. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Sure.
Sure?
I mean, yeah, I like the first movie. I don't know, Mario movies aren't the type that I greatly look forward to, unlike the Japanese Godzilla movies or if they were to announce a new Flash Gordon. But yes, yes, I will see the movie probably opening weekend. I'll go with my family, depending on when it comes out, I guess. Sam may be off at college. But yeah, definitely yeah, we'll see the movie at the theater.
Yeah, so we know nothing about it. They said something like, I think they're expanding Mario's world or something like that. It's going to be maybe bigger and brighter, I think I saw somewhere. So that'll be interesting. I don't know what that means. You know, my sons and I, my kids, we were talking about it and speculating. What could that mean? I was like, well, maybe they'll, you know, they had that Easter egg with Yoshi at the end. So, and they had that little glimpse of Yoshi's Island or whatever you want to call it in the movie world during the film. So maybe they'll explore more of Yoshi's world, Yoshi's location. Maybe Wario or some other villain will enter. I think they'll have to have some Bowser presence, but whether he takes a backseat or whether he helps Mario, like they've done in some of the games, like in some of the RPG games, that could be interesting.
But or maybe a tie-in with Galaxy games. Mm-hmm. What were those like little blue things that you had to collect called like Illumins? Am I confusing that
with Sparks? Well, there was the Luma was in the movie, wasn't she? That little one that had the depressing attitude.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So there is already a little tie, so maybe they can expand on that. And that would certainly be epic, I think. And
that and they're bright, right?
Yeah, bright, yes.
They're like little bright flames or star things, so sure.
Yeah. Brighter. Very bright. That would be good because, you know, the problem, I suppose, that they face is the first one did really well to be like the Switch. It's done so well. How do you top that? I guess going all out into a galaxy theme would be one way to top that, just making it bigger and bolder. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's interesting and exciting. We'll report more when we hear more, of course. But, yeah, that was the first piece of news that came from Mario Day. The second, which was not in the Nintendo Direct exactly, but it was announced by Lego on the same day, and it ties in with Nintendo, is Mario Lego announcements. So there were three sets announced, which were the Bowser Express Train, which looks pretty awesome, actually. King Boo's Haunted Mansion and Battle with Roy at Peach's Castle. Pretty big sets. And we've sort of stopped a little bit with the Mario Lego because there's just so many. But Harrison, my son, he did get a couple of sets for his birthday, and they look really cool. Like there's a little Bowser's car from Super Mario 3D World, that, you know, the purple car that he rides in. I don't know if you've seen that. That was a really nice one. So I reckon the Bowser Express Train would be one that my kids would be interested in. Happens to be the most expensive on the list. So thanks. Thanks for that.
By far.
Yeah. And I think those are US dollars that you're looking at there. $1.99. So probably in Australia it's even more. But the other piece of Lego news was that Mario Kart Lego is going to be a thing. Right at the end, there was this little teaser. They didn't really show any Lego per se, just the kind of Mario figure in the background with a cart kind of thing in the foreground with shadows and lights and kind of, I think, like a revving engine or something. So it was a teaser for what's coming next for Lego, which is that they're bringing Mario Kart into the whole sphere of things, which is pretty interesting. And I think we talked, what did we say last week? We were trying to guess. Oh, we thought Mario Wonder would be a thing. We're like, what could happen on Mario Day when it comes to Lego? Like, maybe Mario Wonder. Well, we were wrong. It's not Mario Wonder. It's okay. It is Mario Kart, which is seems kind of obvious now that you think about it, I suppose. Isn't it? But, yeah, could be cool. I wonder if it'll actually have moving parts. Like, will you be able to race them? Will they have trucks? Will it be electric? You know, like they have electric trains in Lego that actually move. I wonder if they'll move or just be for display. I don't know.
Well, they kind of, they already have the cars, the actual racing cars that you can race with, the ones that move.
I do. So,
you know, would they want to push that over to the Lego world too?
Yeah, you would think so. I would think so. Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see what they actually do with Mario Kart Lego. I think they said it would be 2025 that it will come out, so I guess a year or so. Yeah, that's it's a fun announcement. I'm kind of excited to see what they come up with, and yeah, stay tuned for more information, I guess. If it was, you're not hugely into Lego, right?
Yeah, it didn't really take with me, I guess, when I was a kid. We tried to get our children into it, but they just never took to it the way some people do.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I was just thinking whether they have a nice kind of display set, you know, whether that would be appealing, but maybe that's more of a Justin thing as well. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And the third kind of Mario Day related news was that we have a release date for both Paper Mario and Luigi's Mansion. So these were slated for, I think they were just like 2024 releases previously. And now we have, so this is Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door, which is coming out on the 23rd of May. And we have Luigi's Mansion 2 HD, which is coming out on the 27th of June. So a few months away. I think we had heard a rumor that they would come out on Mario Day, which seemed wildly inaccurate and unlikely. And it didn't happen. But they were mentioned, and yeah, we have release dates, so that's pretty cool. So Paper Mario is only, what, 2 months away, which is nice. And yeah, Luigi's Mansion a month after that. I think that's nicely spaced. And they mentioned, and this is, I don't think they mentioned this exactly, but on the listing of on the website, it says for Paper Mario that it has kind of enhanced features, which we don't really know a lot about yet, like apart from the graphics. It's been kind of made from the ground up for the Switch. So it's a complete remake. Both of them are complete remakes. So they graphically look quite lovely and improved visually very, very much so. Whether that translates into other changes, such as we saw in, I suppose, Super Mario RPG last year, you know, they had a few quality of life kind of changes, like the ability to save anytime kind of thing, which was a bit of a godsend, really, because you can just, you know what it's like in RPGs, trying to find that save area.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the bane of my existence in some games.
Yes. Yeah, I remember one you mentioned recently where you had to, oh gosh, it was a long...
Oh, it was, yeah, it was Shin Megami Tensei 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes. So I like that addition. And Nintendo's really good. They don't change the story necessarily or the characters. It's not like those terrible movie reboots or remakes where they change things or they adapt something from a book and it's like, oh, you missed this part. This isn't a remake. It is a remake graphically, but it's... it'll be faithful to the original. Both of them will be faithful to the original, just like Super Mario RPG was, just with enhanced visuals and some little, I assume, quality of life kind of updates that will make it a bit more enjoyable and easier to get into and hopefully for a new audience too. I'm really excited about both of them. Are you looking towards getting either of those two?
I might, because these, I think I mentioned these last week as two of the games. No, I guess I didn't mention Luigi's Mansion, but we're talking about our favorite Mario games, and Paper Mario is one of the ones that I did play all the way through. Was that a 3DS game or just regular DS?
This one was, I think the Wii was Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door. Yeah.
What am I thinking of that was a 3DS game along those lines? Maybe it was a...
I don't know. There was the DS had the Bowser. There was a Bowser one, but what was it called? Inside Bowser's Story, which is a Mario and Luigi one. You know, they had those little spin-offs. Yeah. There's Paper Mario. Oh, you know what? I'm wrong. This is a GameCube game. Sorry. Thousand Year Door. My bad. I'm thinking of Sticker Star, maybe? I don't know which one I'm thinking of. We need Trev. He's really good at these.
Yeah.
Thousand Year Door is the... It's the second one, and I think that was the GameCube title. Super Paper Mario might have been the Wii. Color Splash? What's that one? Is that a DS one? No, that was probably the Wii U, actually. Not sure. So I don't think I played that one, actually.
Color Splash was Wii U.
But there definitely was one on the DS. Which one?
Oh, 3DS,
was it?
Yeah. It was Paper Jam.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that's the one that I played, because I'm pretty sure I have a memory of playing the one paper game that I played was on the 3DS.
Yeah.
And I only bring it up. We I kind of sabotaged the conversation there with research.
Oh, that's okay. But
between that and this particular Luigi's Mansion, like missing the 3D that we had on the original releases, I was wondering if that would make me sad because I miss being able to play games in 3D.
Yeah, me too. It was actually really awesome, the 3DS. I loved the 3DS. Yeah, I think it'll look nice still in HD, but yeah, the 3D had something special about it. Especially, I guess a lot of those, you know, the ghosts, etc., they were made to look 3D. Like, the you know when you see a 3D movie and it's like, what's the obvious one? Like a ping pong ball. I don't know. Didn't they do that in the 70s or something? They had like a ping pong ball that they shot out towards the audience because they want to show off the 3D. Do you know what I mean?
Although I tend to think of like the horror movies that had it. So it's always like a spear guns and knives and things coming at you. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Balls.
Yes, exactly. So I feel like the game probably had a few elements like that where it purposely did things maybe a slightly different way to show off the 3D aspects. So on a flat screen, it just won't, I guess it'll just look different. But I wonder if it's like, because if you see a movie, and it's probably not quite as obvious as I'm making it out, but yeah, in those movies, like I think I'm thinking 70s, 80s, I don't know. I didn't really see them because I wasn't around, but those movies that you see clips of where it's like, yeah, ping pong ball, something super obvious, in your face kind of thing. They're like, hey, look at our cool 3D moves. Then you see it on a TV and it's like, that was meant for 3D. So I don't know if there's any elements of what we just mentioned too that you'd see and go, oh, that would have been good in 3D, or that was made for 3D and it just doesn't quite work. But I'm sure they'll tweak it. But yeah, we will miss it though for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, they've done that with other games. There have been 3DS games they brought over to the Switch and they've been just fine.
Exactly.
But it's still always in the back of my mind. Like, I wish we still had the ability. I mean, I still have my 3DS so I could bust it out, but, you know, any new games coming out. Maybe that's we'll start that rumor for the Switch too. The handheld's going to be 3D.
Honestly, that would be cool. That would be really cool. I'd love that. I wouldn't be surprised if they did have something like that, but I also don't expect it. But hey, maybe. Yeah, very, very maybe. I'm very excited about both because my son, the one who had his birthday on Mario Day, actually, he enjoyed the Paper Mario game that's on the Switch, and we just mentioned 3 as well. So I'm excited for him because I'm like, I've played both of these games previously, and I'm excited to play them again, but I'm excited for him because they'll be brand new for him. And I think that's the good thing about these remakes is it does, bring them into a whole new audience, kids, right? So especially because they both got entries on the Switch, these two really make sense, because if you've enjoyed Luigi's Mansion 3 and then you missed the whole 3DS era, well, here's essentially a brand new game for you. Luigi's Mansion 2, it might be backwards, but as in reverse number chronology. But yeah, for him, it'll be brand new. It might be, they tend to add things to games. Like Luigi's Mansion 3 obviously has Guigi, so it has that kind of second player component, which Luigi's Mansion 2 didn't have. Whether they add that in to kind of give it a bit more accessibility, I don't know. But yeah, I haven't seen anything to that effect just yet.
I would like to see them do that. My wife, Tyranny and Max, the youngest I spoke about before, they played that together. Sam and I were playing it together, and Tyranny and Max were playing it together. We were kind of racing each other to get to the end. They beat us. Cool. So yeah. Sam and I never actually finished it because after they after they got it done, we're like, well, I guess we won't bother now. We were too defeated. I did play. I did play the second one all the way through on the 3DS. So if there is a two-player component, I'd be more than happy to go through that again. Maybe I'll play with Max this time.
Yeah, swap buddies, playing buddies, and see if you can win. If you lose again, does that mean it's you? It's like you're the...
it could be. My reflexes aren't what they used to be.
I'm sure you're great at Luigi's Mansion. So that's exciting. Looking forward to both of those. The other piece of news, so that's it for Mario Day, unless you had something else to add?
Nope.
So you've got some news about something else that's coming to the Switch in April. Do you want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, this is one that I saw an announcement come over. We covered it on the site. There was a game that was released for the PS3 and Xbox in 2011 called El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron. It's kind of like an anime-inspired game. The main thing about it is, if people haven't heard it, is it was the development team was headed by Sawaki Takayasu, I believe is the pronunciation. He was the fellow behind Devil May Cry.
Oh, cool.
So it's got that pedigree behind it. But the funny thing about this is, well, I don't know if it's funny. It's sort of based on like biblical things, but not really. It's based on an actual we'll call it an Old Testament religious text from called the Book of Enoch. It's not a book you're going to find in the Bible because it's not regarded as an actual Old Testament chapter by Christian and Jewish religious bodies. But it's very much got religious themes to it, and you know there are ways like it could fit in. So it's this an angel sort of like comes down. I haven't played it, so I'm going off what I've read here. I remember always seeing about it and thinking, man, it's not often you get like Bible video games that aren't like claymation, you know, stories about Jesus for kids.
Yeah.
This one's more about the like the end times sort of like apocalypse of wow. the Bible. You know, the fun stuff when you're a kid that you like to hurry up and get to at the end.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
But yeah, there's a whole combat. He has to come down and fight these seven angels that have disappeared. It's kind of hard for me to really even explain. But and I bring it up here almost specifically because like we're seeing so many of these old games get released for the Switch. And this is one that I was never able to play because I didn't have the systems, but it always struck me as interesting. I mean, the look of it is really cool. And the action looks like it's really good too. If you find videos of it on YouTube, it's got a very slick appearance to it. That just looks like some really nice fighting elements to it as well. And it's going to have a bonker story based on, you know, what it's based on. So it's something that always struck me as cool, but I kind of completely forgot about. And now here it's coming to the Switch pretty soon. And so I'm also thinking, what other games did I never get to play and I always wanted to and have completely forgotten about? And suddenly, bam, within the next 6, 7 months, 8 months, year, as we head towards the Switch 2, when people are looking to put something out on the current system, we're going to get these ports. And it's interesting for me to consider as I look back on all these old games.
Yeah, totally. And so, yeah, this is, what did you say? It was like 2011 or something, this game. So it's, you know, over a decade old, not easily forgotten because it's bad or anything, but it's been over a decade. So it's not like a series or anything, right? This is just a one-off kind of thing.
Yeah. I think this was the one game, and it was very well received. It got very good reviews in the research that I put into it. So, you know, just something else to look at, something a different kind of theme than what we normally get in these. So, definitely one to watch out for, I think.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good update. Thank you. So that's 28th of April that comes out. Yep. Only a really 5 or 6 weeks away. So yeah, interesting. I wonder if it's a long game. Like it says it's an action game, if I'm correct. It's sort of a 3D third person kind of action sort of.
Yeah. Vibe. Like an action combat game with some platforming elements. Honestly, it reminds me a little bit of the style of gameplay we would get in like a Bayonetta game.
Yes, does seem similar, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that also had a lot of religious connotations, if I remember right. There were a lot of fights against angels. I mean, not directly, but yeah, that kind of thing. This one's like a more direct take on a specific religious text.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you. Let's keep an eye on for that one. An eye out for that one. I think I said eye on for that one. I think I was going to say let's keep an eye on that one, but then I went with eye out for that one and I just combined
Okay, yeah, keep an eye open. You can go open, out, and on.
Don't give me more options.
So many things you could do with your eyes.
Right, well, thank you. Let's move on to the games that we're playing at the moment, and I will start, and I'm playing a game called Astro Duel 2, which I was meant to wrap my review up last week actually, but it's in progress. It should be up, if not before the show, pretty close after it, like when we launch the show on Monday. And this one, excuse me, it's interesting because it combines two genres that I really like, which are platforming and shooter elements. So the gimmick is that you are flying a spaceship. You're one of four avatars. They're like little, they're cute little creatures, actually. It's very retro graphics, so it's kind of pixelated, but you're a little, I think you're like a fox or a rabbit or something like that. And you're flying a spaceship, of course. and you can enter buildings. You just go up to the door in your ship and suddenly you're a person walking inside a building. And so when you're in the building or in the platforming sections, you have a gun or you can pick up weapons. There's special powers you can pick up. It's pretty fast and fluid, and there's sort of waves you have to get through to conquer each section. So there's usually, you know, I think it's about seven or nine waves of enemies that come through. It's not randomized, which I like. I'm not as big a fan of randomly generated levels or enemies as, you know, static ones, I guess you could call them. So if you can't conquer a wave, you can do it again, and you know what to expect, basically. And it's quite fun. The levels are quite, you know, short in terms of, you know, there's only 9 waves or whatever. So it's not like it's going to take hours and hours to get through. You can sort of come back to it if you want to. You're basically a bounty hunter who receives money for doing these jobs and taking out these enemies. And then with that money, you can unlock new missions. So yeah, you're sort of flying around in space and new ports will open and give you new missions to do. So it's kind of fun in that regard. It's also got a multiplayer or I should say co-op mode that you can jump into as well. So there's a kind of 2 main modes, the mission mode and the co-op mode. Which I haven't spent a whole lot of time in that one yet. So that's one part I need to test before my review is complete. But yeah, it's a fun little game. Cute graphics, fun gameplay. It's probably a bit simpler than I expected in terms of, you know, the platforming is not necessarily screens and screens of platforming. It's all in the one screen. It's all self-contained, which is fine. It's just waves of enemies. But yeah, it's a nice little title that does combine two genres I happen to be a fan of. So, yeah, the controls are probably a little, they're fine. They're just, the ship is a little hard to steer at times. It did take me a bit of getting used to in terms of you only can shoot 3 bullets at once, which is interesting. You don't have unlimited, bullets in your ship. So you shoot, and it took me a while because I was shooting and then suddenly I couldn't shoot anymore. And there's these little dots on your ship that tell you when you have a shot available to you, and it kind of reloads automatically. Once I got the hang of that, it was fine. But I suppose it would be too easy if you could just shoot to your heart's content. So I suppose they scaled it back for that reason.
Right. So it's not a shmup at all. It's more of just straight arcade action.
Yes, yes. And so you have to kind of just, you know, move your ship around the level and sparingly use your weapons to get rid of the enemies that are there. There was this really fun level, though, where you get to try all these different power-ups. And you have to try, I think, 5 successfully without killing yourself to earn a certain amount of money. It took me a while because I just kept blowing myself up because it's just, like I said, it's like a self-contained screen. You're not scrolling across multiple screens. And all these enemies keep appearing in this particular level, like a lot of enemies. And you get these power-ups like a mine. And so you plant the mine, and if an enemy comes by, it explodes. But, of course, if there's too many enemies and you plant the mine and the enemy is right there, when you plant it, it explodes straight away. Because it triggers it, and then you're also dead. So I had a lot of deaths in that one, but it was kind of crazy fun. It was just insane. Like, I'm just like, what? I'm just dying repeatedly. But you seem to have infinite lives, so you can just keep doing it. Yeah, it's a fun little thing. But yeah, watch my review on Astro Duel 2. It's out now. I think it came out maybe about a week ago. It's pretty recent. It's very, yeah, quite recent, that one. The next one that I'm playing is a much older one, well, much older. I think it's from late last year, but it's Rough Justice 84, which is just, it just happened to sit on our review queue a bit longer than usual. And so I picked it up now that the magazine's kind of done and dusted for this edition. That's kept me from reviews a little bit. So I picked up this one. It's sitting at the top of the queue. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to pick this game up and review it because no one else is. It's different. It's a really different game. It's Rough Justice 84. It's set in 1984, hence the 84 in the title, which I kind of like the vibe of it. It's very 80s. You know, the music is very synthy. That's kind of cool. Visually, it looks fairly nice. The game, what it is you're an ex-cop, and there's a bit of a story there, what happened to you at the beginning. But you are now in an agency. What do you call it? Like a PI, I guess, or something, like a private investigator or some sort of security agency, but you don't really do the work. You hire people to come in and do the work, like security jobs, and it's quite varied. I will say the gameplay is interesting in that you can do jobs where you have to find a stolen vehicle or find some information about a company that's corrupt or something like that. You have to search garages and stuff like that. Now, let me just stipulate here. You're not doing the searching. You're not doing the looking for the car. What you actually do is solve puzzles or roll the dice to see whether you have a successful mission or not, which is an interesting take on, I don't know what you call that genre. It's I don't know. I've never played a game where you roll dice to complete missions. And I failed a lot of them just because I didn't get the right numbers, which I find kind of frustrating.
Like, is it completely random? There's nothing you can do to increase your chances of the dice working?
You have stats, like your person has stats that you hire. And I don't know how that helps your chances, but apparently it does. Like, you've got strength, perception, I think it's like empathy or something. There's like these five different stats. But because you start off at kind of level one, or rank one or whatever, you don't have very high stats. Like, most of them are two and some of them are one. And so I didn't see any difference. It didn't do anything to my dice. Like, that's the thing. This is going to be hard to explain. You need to roll a four, five, or a six to complete your mission. And you need to do that three times. But you only have two dice. So then you need to use action points to unlock another die. And I just, sometimes you don't have any action points. And it's like, well, how do I do the mission? I can't do it. So it's, I don't know. There's a lot of confusion on my behalf. And some of the puzzles also are confusing. Like, there's one we have to rotate these circles to over, what do you call it? Like, they're kind of electricity circles. They're called tumblers. I don't know what they are, but they're circles that have lights on them. And when you get all the lights to turn on, it overheats and you can break into this room or whatever it is. I couldn't do it. And I had to go back and train. And eventually I finally did it. But it was hard. And I think it's not the most intuitive of games. But having said that, there's a lot of instructions up front, like a lot. And I actually would say there's too many because I was getting so lost. I'm just like, slow down. What are you talking about? There's a lot of information all at once. And it's a bit overwhelming. I think perhaps it's not maybe rolled out the best possible way. Like, it seems like it's helpful because you're like, okay, this is what you have to do. You have to get your person and then you have to recruit them and then you have to send them on a mission and then you have to go to the mission and then you have to roll the dice. But it's like, you have to press so many buttons. It feels like it wasn't made for the Switch. Feels like it might have been a PC game or something with a mouse that would work really well. Like, you just have to press A and B and Y a lot just to select things, and it's not consistent. And I'm just like, I was stuck in one menu and I couldn't get out of it for the life of me. It was a shop, actually. And they kept telling me to, oh, hey, this is like when I'm right at the start of the game. I've done my first mission and failed it. And they're like, hey, you should go to the shop. And so I went to the shop, checked out the things, and it's like, select a thing and buy it. And so I selected a thing, and it's like, oh, your person already has gears equipped or something. Like, you have no room for shop items, basically. And I'm like, well, what did you send me to the shop for? How do I exit the shop? It just kept telling me to buy something, but I couldn't because I didn't have any room to buy anything. So I'm like, well, this is a loop that I don't want to be in. So frustration is a word that springs to mind, and I hope I'm not being too harsh because I haven't gone that deeply into it. And it is, like I said, it's interesting, the concept and the visuals. I'm just not sure if it's executed overly well, but we'll see. I'll give it a bit more time and I'll see how I go with that one. But yeah, well, this sounds, I found like it a bit frustrating. Yeah.
It sounds to me like when you get a group of people together and you're going to play a new board game and you open it up and the instruction manual is like 10 pages long. And after two pages, everyone's like, let's just go. We'll figure it out as we go along.
Yeah.
And then nobody can figure it out. They have no idea what to do. And you keep referring back to the instruction manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that process in a single player video game.
Mm-hmm. That's accurate. Yeah. And the other interesting thing is it has voice acting, which is nice. But some of it's really loud suddenly. It's just like, oh, what's going on there? I don't know if they've done that because it's supposed to be on a two-way radio or something. Like, you're talking to your agents, like, you know, I'm recruiting you, come to this job or something. And maybe it's supposed to be loud for that reason because it's in the 80s. I don't know, but it's really loud. I don't know what they've done with the volume, but yeah. Anyway, That sounds negative. I'm sorry, because I don't like being negative about games. I will give it some more love and see how it turns out. But yeah, I think it has a few little bugs that I'm not super fond of, but yeah, we'll see how we go overall. That's my wrap up for this week. I am excited to play Pepper Grinder, but I haven't got into that one yet. So next week I can report on that one.
Yep.
Yeah. For my next review after these two are done. But let's go into something that's probably a lot more positive, which is Unicorn Overlord. How's your time with that going?
Oh boy, is it positive.
Yeah?
It's way too early to say this, but I really am pretty certain this is going to end up being my game of the year.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yeah. Looking at what's ahead. The further I get into it, it's kind of comical because I mentioned before how many tweaks and different things you could do within your units when you're going into the real-time battles. Mm-hmm. And you really do have to think about that ahead of time. Like, there are many ways that you can enter fights in this game. Almost all of them involve you initiating it. And then the units that you have set up, and the units are set up of anywhere from, like, let's say one, if you wanted, but that would be crazy too. I've gotten to the point where with the units I have, I can take four people into battle. Oh. Or is it five? Am I on five? No, I'm still on four. And you have to set them all up before you get in. So the one thing you really got to do as you're playing this game is know who you're going up against. And they will always indicate these are going to be like the main people you're fighting. You may be fighting griffins and you may be fighting thieves. So then you need to know, who do I have that's really good at combating these people? Mm-hmm. But then even beyond that, you have the ability to add and remove abilities based on the accessories or the items that you're using. And then you can customize how and when they're used. So if you have the ability to poison someone, you can control when that attack is used. Or if the ability to heal, is it at 50%? Is it at 25%? Do you want to focus on the front row? Do you want to focus on yourself? All these things can be done ahead of time. So it's a little maddening as you're going along because there's so much to think about. But once you get into the battles, and if you've really optimized the party, it's just a blast to push your way past all these enemies that you're fighting, and the more that come in, and you can, it's going, every time you have a fight with someone, it takes away some of their stamina. And when their stamina hits zero, they can't do anything. They're much more susceptible to attack. So you need to worry about, do I have them rest so mm-hmm. that they can get it back quickly? Do I put them in a garrison of, like, say, a castle that you've freed, so they can rest in there and get some of it back? Do you use an item to get some of it back? So many different ways to approach this. But the game is also good, and I may have mentioned this last week, in that if you're really not optimized, you could use items, you could use valor points to still be able to push through without having to start the level over. That said, I've had to start numerous levels over because as I get along, I'm like, this group of people I have is just not cut out for this fight. And then you go back.
Okay. And is it generous with that? Like, does it just let you regroup, or do you have to kind of go back to a save point and do it again?
Speaking of save points, you could save at any point in the battle, and I didn't know that up front. Ooh, so if you're doing along and you did really well in the first half, you could save the game, and then if things start to go south, you could go back and make different decisions. So I appreciate that they put that in. But yeah, you can regroup in that you're able to set up as many units as you want. You get a renown, and that can be spent on opening more units. So, I think I'm using five right now, although I have the ability to unlock more. So you could set up reserve teams that focus on one thing, because you get so many characters, you can't possibly use them all. And as I mentioned last week, you could recruit. So you could get even more people who aren't like main characters in the game. But you could set up a party that is specifically optimized to take out, let's say, for example, I'm trying to think of the name because it was always so House Carls. I've never heard the term before, but there's an enemy you could fight that's their unit type is called a House Carl. So if you're up against a whole lot of them, you could have a group just set aside that you hardly ever use. You want to keep them leveled up, of course. Mm-hmm. but then you could call that group in specifically to take them out and then send them back and pull out a different unit. So just a lot of different things you could do. And everything in between all of that is so well done as far as story goes, as far as gameplay goes, giving you incentive to push ahead. There's freedom of exploration. You can do things in different orders. It's just a lot going on, but I never feel completely overwhelmed by all of it because there's always something that I can do to get me to the point that I need to be in order to take on, like, say, the next main story battle.
Wow. That sounds amazing, honestly. That does sound very cool. And you get that. I mean, I tried the demo, as you know, and, you know, even the very start of the story, like you mentioned, the story being compelling. It is initially, like, it even just begins with that sort of rainy scene where the queen's, what is she? And she's in peril of some sort. It's just, it engages you almost from the beginning, right? And yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad it takes you along on a journey on the way, which is really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does. It's a good story. Sometimes, in all these types of games where there are different side battles and things you can do, some of the story kind of gets pushed aside. Like, the plot is always so urgent. We have to do this. We have to hurry up and do this. We have to hurry up and do this. But then they always have to put little things that are saying, well, maybe we don't need to go right away. It's like Link. You know, yeah. Zelda's about to die, but, you know, I got to do this, and I got to go fight this, and I got to get more horses. So he's just constantly, what do we say? He's got attention deficit disorder. People in this game have to also, in order in order to get where they need to be.
I wonder if there are games that are more direct to the point, but not in this style, right? If you had a game that was all about just going straight to the end goal, would that work, or would that be too quick?
That's Mario.
True. Yeah, exactly. But he... But he has things to collect.
Starts running right, and he doesn't stop till he saves the princess.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That's good. Cool. That's awesome. I mean, I'm loving the sound of this, and to hear that it might be Game of the Year. I mean, I would be very surprised if it wasn't in your top 10 anyway. And we know it's only March, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be. And there are a lot of games coming out that I'm really looking forward to. JRPG style games. We've got a new a Legend of Heroes game coming out, and there's a new East game coming out. Both of those, could certainly take over. But right now, I'm just absolutely thrilled with this one.
Excellent. I'm glad it's lived up to the expectations that we had for it.
Yep.
Yeah. What else are you playing this week?
Well, this is a really interesting one. It's called The Veil, Shadow of the Crown. It just came out yesterday, I believe. It was due for release today, and it came out yesterday. We got the code a bit late, so our review's not up yet. But this is a game that was made for blind gamers.
Oh, wow.
There are no visuals whatsoever. I mean, there are, but they don't impact the game, I think. As you're playing it, most of the time, it's just like a black screen with, like, dots kind of moving around. Sort of like when you close your eyes after looking at something bright, you can kind of see the trace of the light moving around in your eyelids.
Yeah.
That's what the screen is, more or less. But it's completely story-driven, and the whole thing is, like, I played it strictly with headphones. I think that's got to be the only way you could play it. I may try it on the TV to see if it works. Mm-hmm. But it's all story. There are people talking, and then there's audio effects, combat. I'll focus on the audio effects first, like at the beginning. I'm not too far into it, but at the beginning, it's set in like a medieval time, and you're playing this blind princess who's in a carriage ride, and just listening to the carriage ride was fantastic, because most of the time in a video game, if you're in a carriage, the sound cue they're going to give you is like the sound of the tires on the track, and whatever talking is going on, and that's just about it. But on this one, you have that sound. You have the track. You have the guy talking to you as you're riding. In the distance, you can hear a river. I'm pretty sure you could hear animals. There was like a little bell. And I'm thinking like those carriages had bells attached to them, but there's just like this slight ringing of that. Like every possible thing that you're going to really hear when you're on this has been put into the audio for this.
All right.
So it's very lush. And then the like right away they're on their way towards not sure where exactly they were going. They were describing it, like the main girl asked the guy to describe it, and he said, well, picture a lot of sheep and you kind of got it. And she was mad at him for not making it sound better. Like, I can't see it. You can at least pretend that this is someplace better than what it is. But they get attacked, and you can only hear the fight. You're not involved in it. But then it kind of like flashes back to her childhood, where she was kind of taught how to fight. And so what they do in the game is everything is done on audio cues. So like, let's say the first real fight you have is you kind of go down to a river to get something to drink after this fight's done, and you wake up and wolves start coming at you. So off in the distance, you can hear the wolves, and they kind of get closer, and you're either hearing them up front or to the left or to the right, possibly to the back. But when I went to attack, that never worked. So maybe that, you know, was just me imagining they were behind me.
Right.
But they make a certain sound when they're close, and then you have to flick the right stick to the, like, let's say if you hear it on the left, you flick the right control stick to the left, and that is the attack, and that's how you hit.
Right.
So you're completely listening to sound cues. With the wolves, it's easier listening to the growls. When you're fighting people, they're not going to growl, but you can hear leather creaking. You can hear feet on dirt. You can kind of hear breathing. So there's like a slight audio cue of where you need to attack when, and then you just have to hurry up and do it.
Wow. That's an ambitious title. It's so different. That's very unique, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's been out on other systems for a while, and it won a lot of awards. So far, I would consider it an award winner too. Like I said, I'm early. I don't know. And the thing is, like, I'm not trying to play it and pretend that I'm blind. I can't do that because I could always open my eyes and go play another game. So that's totally unfair. But I imagine if you are a gamer, then this is just absolutely fantastic. It's, you know, completely tuned in to what you need for a game to be. I'm playing it as a guy who can move on and play any other game and still enjoying it because the acting is really good. So far, the story is fine. It pushes along very quickly. We'll see where it ends up going. It still is gameplay, completely without visuals. I have to concentrate. I need to figure out the system, and I need to make it work. So, you know, I don't feel like it's I'm trying to say this and be sensitive at the same time. Like, I think a lot of times if people are releasing these kind of games, then they end up being dumbed down, and they didn't do that. They're taking this very seriously as a game. For all gamers, and making it sure that it's also completely accessible to blind gamers.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I've not heard of anything like this that's been done quite like this, which is interesting. Yeah. And the way you describe the sounds, I mean, you know, audio is a very important part of games already, but to have that be the center point kind of thing is really interesting. And, you know, you have to focus on that. That's your main cue. So that's really cool. I even when you mentioned the wolves, I can just imagine wolves howling in the distance. That would be quite eerie as a sort of audio cue when you're playing without the visual stimulation, and you're like, oh, there's something coming, and it, like, you don't need to see it, you can just hear it, and it's danger approaching. So,
and they did that well too, because she goes down to the river and you hear wolves in the distance. She's like, great, wolves. And then she keeps going about what she's doing. But, you know, you're thinking, oh, boy, they're not going to have wolves howling in the distance unless they're going to get closer. And sure enough, here they come.
Oh, wow. That actually sounds really cool. I love that.
Yeah. But even like the interactions with people, that she meets somebody and like she hears someone and kind of calls out to acknowledge that he's there. And the first question was friend or foe. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you got to find out first before we start a conversation, because you don't have the visual cue to let you know, does this person look like someone I could trust? Does the person not? So she just came right out. It's like, you know, let me know if I should talk to you or be running away.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. That's cool. I can't wait to hear where that goes and how it ends up.
It looks like it's a quick game. They said that you could play it in around 5.5 to 6 hours. Hope I'll push through it here pretty quickly. I think I'd get the review up this week.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, definitely look forward to reading that one. And stay tuned, listeners, to find out more. Because we're also an audio, we're a podcast, right? So, although we do have the YouTube version. So, Yeah, we should put in some wolf howls or something for the podcast listeners, just to keep them on their toes.
Oh yeah, yeah. let them just kind of pop them in every now and again, and let them figure, oh no, I'm about to get attacked. I gotta log off.
Yeah, exactly. Did you want to talk about the next game, Trauma Team?
Yeah, I will quickly. Really quickly. You, Trevor, and I talked recently about this game. Trauma Team was the fourth in the series of Trauma Center. Trauma Center was a game that were these like almost like a Grey's Anatomy kind of surgery games for the DS. You had to swipe on the screen to perform different surgeries. They had these really big melodramatic stories. Great games. The last one that came out was Trauma Team for the Wii in 2011. They were released by Atlas, and it saddens me every day of my life that this series just completely got dropped, because I thought they were a blast. Trauma Team was not just operations. It also involved, there was like a forensics, what do you call someone who does forensics? A forensicser. Forensics technician. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
There was a doctor who was just kind of like diagnosing patients based on their charts and what they were saying. There was a guy who was fixing bones. We had someone who was whatever it is, the camera that you put inside things to remove them. I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about here because I'm not playing the game. This was one of the first games that I played with my family. The second time I played it, I played with Sophie and Sam. And we would each select a character and do that person's operations or whatever they were on the ones where you were like diagnosing patients. Then we would all do it together. But Sophie's back from college with her boyfriend. And that's the game of all the games we have. She wanted to bust out to play with him. Nice. And so I've been kind of watching them play, just talking about it again, remembering everything. And I mentioned this because this is my call to Atlas to hurry up and get us another one of these games. We've waited long enough. It will soon be almost 15 years, and they're such great games, and I would love to see what they would look like on a more modern system, especially since the last one we had was the Wii.
Yeah, it is a long time ago, like you said, 15 years. And what happened? They had four in the series, and then do we know why they stopped? Like,
I'm assuming they were too niche. If they'd sold better, then they probably would have continued making them. But like I said, we're 15 years down the road now. It's time to revitalize it and see what we can do.
Yeah, and you're not alone. I'm seeing people online, talking about this and saying it's high time for a new Trauma Center. How can we convince Atlas to bring back Trauma Center? And I feel like even if they wanted to try porting some of them to the Switch first, since we seem to be in that phase at the moment where a lot of games, as we mentioned, get ported to the Switch. Why not this series? You could do a collection, which we also love to talk about collections.
You could. Yeah. And the motion controls are so much better now than they were even with the Wii. So a lot of these, and that's how you did the operations. The one on the Wii, I believe, is called New Blood, the one that was developed specifically for the Wii. So you were using the Wiimote and the Nunchuck to perform the operations, pull up the instruments that you needed to use. It's just so much fun. And again, it fits. They were very much JRPG style melodramatic stories. The one with a Trauma Team involved this whole plague that was taking out the entire West Coast of the United States. And they had to hurry up and find it. One of the doctors was like a Japanese princess. Another one was a superhero. More or less.
Wow.
So yeah, just bonkers characters, bonkers stories, so much fun. And the gameplay was fantastic. So if that is a release day game for the new Nintendo, I will completely lose my mind.
Yes. Oh, I hope that happens for you. Putting all my positive thoughts and energy into this announcement.
I appreciate it. Send it out into the universe.
Yes, exactly. I can't see anything online in my quick search just now that says they're thinking about a new game, which is really sad.
Oh, yeah, no.
Who knows?
No indication whatsoever, but I'll keep talking about it until it happens.
Yeah. And if there's enough people, maybe it will. I don't know. That'd be cool, though. I'd like to do that. I'd like to try that. And I'd love to see it on the Switch as well. I was thinking motion controls. I feel like the game I'm playing, that Rough Justice 84, would benefit from even just a pointer, like having a Wiimote that I could point at the screen just to say, I'm going here, I want to do this, rather than having to move my cursor around and or press buttons. I was actually thinking that yesterday, just how much I miss that sometimes in certain games. Anyway, cool. Trauma Team. Yeah. Well, if you're a Trauma Center, Trauma Team fan, listeners, let us know. Maybe we can get a petition to Atlas and get them considering thinking about trying to start talking about making a new game or something like that.
Someone has to have a connection. We'll find that person and make it work.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Are they a Japanese developer? Are they from Japan?
Atlas is the publisher, I believe.
Oh, the publisher.
Do they develop? Mm. Are they developed publisher? See, now they're going to be mad at me for not knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do both, develop and publish, sure.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, I'm in Japan in April, so maybe I can knock on their door and ask them nicely. Gemma from Pure Nintendo. Yeah, okay, we'll make a game for you. Thanks.
Yep. I'll pay you to make that happen. I'll help finance your trip if you can make that work.
Thank you. Deal. Awesome. Well, let's move on to our last segment, which is our Switch 2 Rumors of the Week. And it looks like we've got a fairly detailed description of the power of the Switch 2, potentially. This is rumors, obviously, as we say every week, speculation. This is our disclaimer. None of this has been obviously announced by Nintendo, and until that happens, we are just talking about the rumors and getting excited about what could possibly be coming with a Switch 2 console, whatever it's called. And naming is one of our items on today's list, actually. So in terms of power, we've got a YouTuber and leaker. Is this Moore's Law is Dead? Is that the name of the YouTuber and leaker?
I believe so. I found this reported mm-hmm. by Tweaktown. Again, we're a few shades away from the source of this mm-hmm. material, but yeah, Moore's Law is Dead is the YouTuber and leaker who mentioned this.
Cool. And so they're saying that Nintendo Switch 2 will use NVIDIA's AI-powered DLSS rendering, which should offer boosted image quality. That's interesting. Is that for old games that would be playable on the Switch 2? Is that what that means? Or is it just for new games?
I think it would be for the new games. Okay. I believe they have to be developed for it. Otherwise, there mm-hmm. could be like emulation or not emulation that makes it happen. But yeah, it's that will provide better, better, faster rendering. But I mean, that's expected. So the key part here is probably NVIDIA's AI powered DLSS rendering. Just because we know that NVIDIA is at the top of this mm-hmm. technology. So it's good to see their name in there.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be, I think that's quite exciting if that's true. And they also added, Tweaktown added that Nintendo is widely believed to be collaborating on a custom NVIDIA T230 chip featuring 8-core ARM or ARM A7, I'm just saying all these numbers. Does this mean anything to you? A78C CPU with an integrated GeForce GPU, graphical processing unit, based on the GeForce RTX 30 series Ampere architecture. That's a lot of technical jargon, but essentially they're saying it's a custom chip with this powerful kind of CPU and GPU. And I don't know the last part. I don't know what the GeForce RTX 30 series is, but that's the thing that brings it all together, I suppose, if you're talking about architecture.
Yeah, and it's all beyond me, too. The reason why I put this here, too, is mainly because the rumors that we're seeing are starting to get really detailed on what it is that's actually going to happen. Do I know exactly mm-hmm. what it means? No. but they're tossing out actual products, actual brands, actual numbers now. Which leads me to believe that maybe we're starting to get to the point where some of this is actually what's going to end up taking place.
Yeah, that's a good point because, I mean, they're building something and they're using some components, right? Probably NVIDIA components. They need some sort of CPU because they need that. They need a GPU. If you're getting into these nitty-gritty details, well, someone knows what they're using. They might have played around with different versions, you know, different CPUs and whatnot. They might have tried a few different ones. They might have replaced them with a newer one more recently. Someone might have heard about that. So it is interesting. It is interesting that it's so detailed and specific, I suppose, as we get closer and closer to an announcement, which we're sort of thinking maybe in May would be the announcement for a 2025 release, is kind of the current way of thinking. But then the next little tidbit of rumors is about the name. And so you found a post that suggested the name would be Nintendo Attach, which is interesting. What's do we know more about what that might mean? Like, is it because it's attaching to something?
Yeah, and that's the reason I have this here too. This was we found this in a Reddit post in the gaming subreddit. Like, yeah, it has to mean something. So, like, what are we attaching? I don't know. My thought was first that if, like, again, we're just playing off this. We have no idea if this is true. And now it's just pure fun speculation. But could we have the ability to attach, like, a second screen somehow? And we're back to having two screens. I thought originally that it would be cool if somehow you're able to, like, through an app, connect devices to, like, let's say, your phone for a second screen. So, like, if you have a game that has one screen, now you can pull up a map or something, you know, whatever kind of interface on your phone, and it connects with the system, and now you've got two screens without having to pay for two screens because you already had one. So that's what I was thinking. Again, you know, what am I? I have no idea what I'm talking about here, but I couldn't think of what else I would need to attach.
And I think I saw a while ago there was some sort of patent filed by Nintendo for something like that, where they had a screen attachment kind of situation. So that might be there might be something to that. Nintendo does love to file patents. Is that the right terminology? File patents? Is that what you do? Yeah, they love to file patents for all sorts of interesting things because they're ideas manufacturers. Like, they come up with ideas and then they test them, and some of them work and some of them don't, and some of them become full-fledged, you know, consoles or devices, and some don't. So you can't tell for sure, but, you know, we see some of these patents flying around over the years, and I feel like I've seen something like that a couple of years ago. So that there could be some truth to that. You never know. I think it'd be a good idea because we've talked about the Wii U and how much we actually did enjoy having that second screen, despite, you know, the commercial failure of it. It was still a fun system. And we've also talked about the DS and 3DS and how much we love those two screens. So, you know, without going back to a dual screen situation for a Switch 2, which is possible as well, but, you know, everyone has a phone pretty much, right? Like, it's pretty ubiquitous these days. It's right there. It's sitting probably right next to you while you're playing anyway. So if you could use it somehow as a map or a extra, like, an, you know, whatever, itinerary, what am I trying to say? Your where your equipment sits.
Inventory.
That's it. I was trying to say, inventory. Thank you. I was thinking itinerary. I don't know why. That's because I'm going to Japan and I'm trying to book flights and accommodation.
Well, maybe there are games that require you to check your itinerary. That's
yes. That could also work. I just think that would be really cool. So interesting rumors there. Thank you, Kirk, for bringing them to our attention. And time will tell.
I will say, if they do something like that, then they had better also have an option to still be able, like, whatever information they're pushing over to your phone, you would still be able to call that information up with, like, like hitting the plus button on your on your controller, definitely. Because there will be some people who do not have access to that second screen.
Exactly.
The younger gamers, you know, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, kids. Yeah. My son doesn't have a phone. He does have access to my old phone, so he could probably use that. But, you know, he only had that recently because I got a new phone. So prior to that, he did not have that. He has a tablet, I suppose. You could probably use a device like that if it's just, I don't know if it'd be Bluetooth or something like that technology, I suppose. I'm not sure how that would work. Yeah, but you're right. Kids, especially younger kids, wouldn't necessarily have that and you couldn't expect them to. So you have to make sure it's accessible another way. And maybe it's not something all games would use anyway. I don't know. But
yeah. Yeah. A lot of games for the DS didn't really make use of that second screen effectively.
Yeah, that's it. It was just blank or some static image or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah,
very interesting. Well, thank you again, yeah, for those rumors, because it's fun. It's fun to talk about. And if listeners have any rumors that you would like us to talk about, let us know. We're keen to hear your thoughts. Any further thoughts from you before we close off for the week?
I don't think so. I've got a couple games I'm eager to get back into. So
Yeah, awesome. We'll
close off.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Kirk, for joining me again this week. Thank you, listeners, for joining us and hearing about all things Nintendo. We love what we do. And as I mentioned, our magazine has wrapped up design. It's just finalizing the proofing. It's thank you, Kirk, for your eagle eyes on that. So it should be printing very soon and heading out to your way next week, I hope. So if you'd like to get on board, head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo. You can support us over there. You can also follow us on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Twitter. And until next week, thank you and game on, everybody. Bye.